Then the Lord spoke to Moses, "Tell the Israelites to turn back and camp in front of Pi Hireth between Migdol and the sea. You must camp in front of Baal Zephon, facing it by the sea. Pharaoh will say of the Israelites, 'They are wandering around the land in confusion. The wilderness has boxed them in.' I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue them. Then I will receive glory by means of Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord." So the Israelites did this. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about the people and said, "What have we done? We have released Israel from serving us." So he got his chariot ready and took his troops with him. He took 600 of the best chariots and all the rest of the chariots of Egypt with officers in each one. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the Israelites, who were going out triumphantly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, his horsemen and his army, chased after them and caught up with them as they camped by the sea beside Pihahiroth in the front of Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up and saw the Egyptians coming after them. Then the Israelites were terrified and cried out to the Lord for help. They said to Moses, "Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you took us to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Isn't this what we told you in Egypt? Leave us alone so that we may serve the Egyptians. It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." But Moses said to the people, "Don't be afraid. Stand firm and see the Lord's salvation. He will provide for you today. For the Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You must be quiet." The Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to break camp. As for you, lift up your staff, stretch out your hand over the sea, and divide it so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I am going to harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them, and I will receive glory by means of Pharaoh, all his army, and his chariots and horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I receive glory through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen." Then the angel of God, who was going in front of the Israelite forces, moved and went behind them. The pillar of cloud moved from in front of them and stood behind them. It came between the Egyptian and the Israelite forces. The cloud was there in the darkness, yet it lit up the night. So neither group came near the other all night long. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. The Lord drove the sea back with a powerful east wind all that night and turned the sea into dry land. So the waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with the waters like a wall to them on their right and their left. The Egyptians set out in pursuit, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen, and went into the sea after them. Then, during the morning watch, the Lord looked down on the Egyptian forces from the pillar of fire and cloud and threw them into confusion. He caused their chariot wheels to swerve and made them drive with difficulty. "Let's get away from Israel," the Egyptians said, "because the Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may come back on the Egyptians, on their chariots and horsemen." So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea returned to its normal depth. While the Egyptians were trying to escape from it, the Lord overthrew them in the sea. The waters came back and covered the chariots and horsemen. the entire army of Pharaoh that had gone after them into the sea, none of them survived. But the Israelites had walked through the sea on dry ground, with the waters like a wall to them on their right and their left. That day the Lord saved Israel from the power of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. When Israel saw the great power that the Lord used against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and believed in him and in his servant Moses. May God add his blessing to that reading of his word.
How much do I get in the weeds here with this chapter? I don't know. I've been struggling with this, how to do this and how to present it. Exodus chapter 14 is arguably the most powerful chapter in Scripture, in my opinion. Exodus chapter 14 brings so much of theology together and collides in this chapter. And what we've been doing with the Exodus narrative up to this point, and I've had a lot of good feedback on this series, by the way, because I've connected it to what's happening in our nation today. This was Israel's controlling narrative, you understand. The Exodus narrative was what they lived by and what they hearkened back to. And this chapter, Exodus 14, is about bodily resurrection. Can you make that leap with me? Or is that a bridge too far? This is about bodily resurrection and how God does it. This chapter is an exposition of Romans 8:3. Where Paul says, what the law could not do, since it was limited by the flesh, God did. Now, in Romans chapter 8, that is about bodily resurrection, which is where we're going to go after this Exodus narrative finally is done. Well, what the law could not do because it was limited by the flesh, God did. What, Paul? Well, he tells us the very next line. God condemned sin in the flesh. God says to sin and to Satan and to Pharaoh here, you want dominion over those bodies? You want your reward for Genesis chapter 3? You got it. Take dominion over these, like Milton says, these puny inhabitants of the earth. God condemns sin in the flesh by giving sin dominion over our bodies. Now, you're going to watch this. How did he do that, Paul? Well, he sent his own son in flesh like ours. Well, like ours and how? Two ways. And here's what your flesh and my flesh, under sin's domain, and as a sin offering, your bodies, my physicality, your physicality, your body is offered to Satan as payment for your sin, right? Your body is capital, physical death. And God puts us under the dominion of sin here and now, and we might say to God, well, that's a funny way to save us. You're giving sin, Satan, and Pharaoh dominion over my body as a way to rescue me? Oh, yes, says Paul. That's exactly right. And oh yes, says the narrative of Exodus 14. This chapter, the story now tightens about Israel being rescued from the domain of sin. And it moves with lightning speed. And you remember what God said in Exodus chapter 6? Remember what he promised them? Remember the I wills? God said in Exodus chapter 6, he's going to do six things. And in this Exodus 14, it is the I wills that he promised in action. And here's what he said, the I wills. He says in Exodus 6, he says, I will deliver you, number one. Now, this is a promise for all of us, by the way. It's not, you don't have to be an Israelite mired in the slavery of Egypt. This is for all of us. Remember, the Exodus narrative is both corporate and it is both individual. So God says, I will deliver you. How? Well, I'm going to free you from slavery. Then I'll redeem you. And then we'll have a relationship. Number four thing, I'll be your God and you'll be my people. And with that relationship, then I will lead you to the promised land. And when you get there, the sixth thing, I will give you that promised land as a possession. That sounds good, huh? I'll deliver you. I'll free you from slavery. We're not in slavery, Tim. We see that's the enemy's trick, right? We talked about that. The enemy's trick is to make you think you're not in slavery. I'll redeem you. Then I'll be your God. You'll be my people. I'll lead you to the promised land, and then I'll give you that as a possession. And here we see, well, wait a minute. What do we have to do? Well, how do we get into the I wills? How do we have access to those six things? How did Israel have access to those six things? Well, very simply, they did something that patently looked weak. You just take the blood of the lamb, paint it on the doorpost, paint it over the lintel of your house. You just do that. And then you stay in your house. Remember Moses? Did you find that strange? And Moses says, once you do that, stay in that house. And God says, I won't let the destroyer, if I see the blood, I won't let the destroyer come in there. Don't leave the house. And when I see the blood, I'll pass right over you. And the access to the I wills is that we simply have faith in that blood. And here we go. They've left Egypt. And look what God does. God's a poor tactician. Then the Lord spoke to Moses. Now they're on their merry way. You understand the geography of Palestine and the Sinai Peninsula and Egypt? Of course not, but I do. Okay, so they leave Egypt, and it's a straight shot north to the Promised Land. Right along the Mediterranean Sea. No obstacles. The Promised Land's where they're going, right? So they leave Egypt, and they're going up there along the Mediterranean Sea, headed for Palestine, headed for the Promised Land. And then look what happened. Then the Lord spoke to Moses. Tell the Israelites to turn back. What? Tell the Israelites to turn back and camp in front of Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. An untenable position. Undefensible. But God tells them, go back, retrace your steps, and I'm going to put you right against the Red Sea, which is, well, that's, you can't defend that. There's no way out here. You must camp in front of Baal Zephon, facing it by the sea. Now, here's what Pharaoh's going to do. God's saying this to Moses. Verse 3, Pharaoh will say of the Israelites, they're wandering around the land in confusion. The wilderness has boxed them in. I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue them. God apparently is offering the Israelites to Pharaoh. God is putting the Israelites in a position where he's inviting Pharaoh to come down. You want dominion over those bodies? You want to have dominion over humanity? You got it, Satan. You got it, Pharaoh. You've got it, sin. The wilderness has boxed them in. Do you ever feel boxed in? When else did God do this? When else did God take the representative of Israel and put him in an indefensible position? If you are the Son of God, what are you doing up on that cross? If you are Israel, what are you doing against that Red Sea? What kind of God do you serve? I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will think exactly that. Then I will receive glory by means of Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am Yahweh. So the Israelites did this. There's the offering. Remember Troy? Remember Greece? Remember Helen? Trojan horse? Got it? What did the Greeks do? They offered Troy the horse. God is offering Pharaoh the horse. Why would God do that? You know, God could have prevented Genesis 3, the fall. He's got the juice to do that. God, why don't you just take your people straight north along the Mediterranean, take them to the promised land? Done and done. God, when the enemy came at us in Genesis 3, why didn't you just intervene? And I'll tell you why. Because in God's mind from eternity past, this is the cool thing about what the narrative here today. In God's mind from eternity past, God knew that he would use our fall as a means to redeem us. Did you get that? You get the nuance there? That's the God we serve. You made mistakes, you have sin, feel boxed in, and you think, whew, I'm against the Red Sea. I had a way out, and man's wisdom would say, you go north. Forget what God just said to you because that's crazy. No, ever and always, the rescue that God has in mind for his people demands, and here's the paradox, demands that sin have dominion over us now. There they are, against the Red Sea. There's the offering. And that's what God predicts Pharaoh's going to say. They're boxed in. I've got the Son of God boxed in. He's on that cross. He's nailed to that cross. He's helpless. Go, man. I'm going to stamp God's tongue out once and for all. Pharaoh's thinking, I'm going to take care of this situation. Verse 5. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, you find out here Pharaoh does exactly what God wanted. Do you remember what God said early on in this narrative? He says to Moses, Moses says, you know, it's not going very well. He took our straw, we're scattered. People are complaining. And God says, you know, relax, Moses. You know what you're going to find out? Pharaoh is actually going to do my bidding. Don't you love that about God? That he turns the tables on the enemy, and the enemy ends up doing his bidding. The serpent comes to us in Genesis 3, and God actually says, don't worry, that serpent's going to do my bidding. Why? Because there is only one Lord of the Rings, and he does not share power. And that is who we serve. God is not daunted by anything. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about the people and said, what have we done? We have released Israel from serving us. Now, I'm going to tell you something. And I know of what I speak. If you flee the world's culture, they're coming for you. Because don't you know you are to serve them? Haven't you got that straight yet? The government has the answers for you, right? You're to serve them. And we find out how well that's working, huh? Sidebar, interesting fact. Satan and sin can't exist without you. Sin can't exist unless it invades your body. Parasites cannot exist unless they invade the host. Disease cannot exist unless it becomes symptomatic and manifests itself in the body. Cancer can't exist unless it gets into your body. Sin, that's why Pharaoh's panicking here. We can't get along without them. You see, God put Satan in an impossible situation. I want you to get a hold of the brilliance of this God. He put Satan in an impossible situation because he says, well, Satan, if you want to have relevance and you want to have existence and you want to have expression, the only way that you can do that is that if you invade and take dominion over these bodies. And at the same time, the minute Satan falls for that and takes the offering, his demise is certain. I'll explain that. Remember when Jesus drove the demons out of the young man, and Jesus says to them, what's your name? To the demon. And they say, we're legion, because we are many. And we exist in this person, in this boy, in this body. Jesus says, I'm going to cast you out. And here's the interesting thing that the demons say. They begged him not, they said to him, send us into those pigs. And they begged him not to banish them to the abyss. Do you think hell's a bad place? Listen to this. Even the demons, they're threatened. Demons are threatened by hell. Demons are threatened by the abyss. And rather than go be banished to the abyss, they say to Jesus, send us into those pigs. Satan cannot exist. Sin cannot exist unless they find expression in our bodies, which is exactly the way God intended it to be. Don't be threatened by that statement. It's okay. So Pharaoh responds. As I said, you leave the culture, it's going to respond. It's coming after you hammer and tong. Why? Because they can't exist without you. So Pharaoh, verse 6, he got his chariots ready and took his troops with him. He took 600 of the best chariots. I mean, Pharaoh is full force. He's coming at them. And all the rest of the chariots of Egypt and with officers in each one. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the Israelites who were going out triumphantly. Remember, Pharaoh thinks they're wandering around. Listen, they're wandering around in confusion. The wilderness has them boxed in. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, his horsemen and his army, chased after them, and they caught up with them as they camped by the sea in front of Baal Zephon. There's the dominion. God offers them. Pharaoh takes the bait. Pharaoh catches up with them. And Pharaoh now has dominion over the Israelites. He's got them. God condemned sin in the flesh by sending his own son in flesh, like ours, under sin's domain and as a sin offering. God offered Satan dominion over the body of Jesus. Why? God offered dominion of the Israelites to Pharaoh. Why? Just send him north. Go along the Mediterranean. Go to the Promised Land. No, there's a big U-turn here. As Pharaoh approached, verse 10, the Israelites looked up and saw the Egyptians coming after them. I love the way this narrative goes. Can't you feel it? Maybe you have felt it. God, if you really loved me, you would not allow this to happen to me. God, if you really did exist and you cared for me, this I wouldn't be against the Red Sea. So, therefore, I'm done with you. Watch this. That's exactly what they do. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up and saw the Egyptians coming after them. You leave the culture, they're coming. Then the Israelites were terrified and cried out to the Lord for help. That's appropriate, of course. But look at the ratio here. Look at the ratio in this paragraph of how often they think about the Lord and how often they think about Egypt. Do you do that when you pray? I talked about prayer some time ago, and I said it's kind of a downer when you pray to just think about Egypt. And you rehearse your problems. And you've memorized those problems. And that's prayer. I'm going to rehearse my troubles. What you focus on expands. What you focus on expands. And what you focus on in prayer is going to expand. What, you mean we shouldn't bring our troubles to God, Tim? What's this? No, you should. And they do, initially. Then they cried out to the Lord for help. And then they turn on Moses. They said to Moses, sarcastically, "Is it because there are no graves in Egypt?" Number one, they talk about Egypt, "that you took us to die in the wilderness." A lot of faith going there, huh? "What have you done to us by helping us out of Egypt?" Number two, "Isn't this what we told you in Egypt?" Number three, "Leave us alone so that we may serve the Egyptians." Number four, "It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians," number five, "than to die in the wilderness." Egypt, 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 Egypt. Egypt gets five mentions. The Lord gets one mention. Do you do that? I do. Well, I got to keep reminding God. I make sure I've got to remind God. Remember, God, I got this, I got this, I got this, this, this. Well, what if we concentrated on God? And turn your eyes upon Jesus, and the things of earth will go strangely dim. You see? Focus on your problem or focus on the Lord. They're focusing on their problem. But Moses said to the people, Moses tries to pull them back here. "Don't be afraid, stand firm." Now look at the ratio here. "And see the Lord's salvation," number one. "He will provide," number two. "See the Lord's salvation. He will provide for you today. For the Egyptians," they get one mention. "You see today, you will never see again." Number three, "The Lord will fight for you." Moses pulls them back. 3-1. "You must be quiet." What? How are you doing with that? When Pharaoh's barreling down against you and you're on against the Red Sea, John the Baptizer comes along and he says, "Now you need to prepare the way of the Lord. You need to make his way straight. You need to make a highway through the desert and the wilderness. And the way you prepare the way of the Lord is that you get out of the way of the Lord." And that prepares his way. You see, they're standing in the way of the Lord right now. Oh, that's so hard. That is so hard. Yeah, but if I don't, it might not turn out the way I want. I don't know. I'm going to stay here. I'm just going to stay in the way of the Lord because I got to steer this thing. The Israelites are trying to steer this thing. Because, well, we got the sea behind us here. The Lord will fight for you. You must be quiet. Now, there's some exchange that's not recorded between verse 14 and verse 15. Because the next thing we see is, the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me?" That's puzzling. "Tell the Israelites to break camp. As for you, lift up your staff, stretch out your hand over the sea, and divide it so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground." I wonder what Moses was thinking right then. What? "Stretch out my hand over the sea and divide it?" Okay. So that they can go through on dry ground. And then verse 17. "I'm going to harden the heart of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them. I'm going to make them an offer they can't refuse. I'm going to offer Pharaoh complete dominion. And I'm going to make Pharaoh think it's to his advantage, the brilliance of God." None of the powers of this world knew God's wisdom, 1 Corinthians 2:8, because if they had known it, they would never have crucified the Lord of glory. If Pharaoh had known the wisdom of God here, he never would have gone after these Israelites. But God hardened their hearts. I will receive glory by means of Pharaoh and all his army and his chariots and horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am Yahweh when I receive glory through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. And God says to Satan in Genesis chapter 3, bring your horses, bring your chariots, bring it, because I'm going to actually receive glory from that. Then the angel of the Lord, who was going in front of the Israelite forces, moved and went behind them. The pillar of cloud moved from in front of them and stood between them. It came between the Egyptians and the Israelite forces. The cloud was there in the darkness, yet it lit up the night. So neither group came near the other all night long. What do you think's going on there? Whatever's going on there. Isn't that a great thought? That God will move between us and Pharaoh at the appropriate time so that his eventual plan will come to fruition. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. The Lord drove the sea back. Remember what Pharaoh said? Or remember what Moses promised him through God? The Egyptians that you see today, you will never see again. Verse 13. Hold on to that. You got some Egyptians. They're coming at you. We find out God actually gives those Egyptians temporary dominion over us. And it seems so cruel, doesn't it? Seems, God, where's your heart? Where's your heart, God? These Egyptians. You've offered me to the Egyptians. They've taken away my Lord. And I don't know where they put him. Mary says at the tomb. Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would have died. You offered my brother Lazarus to the Egyptians. And now the Egyptians have complete dominion over my brother Lazarus. And if you'd have been here, that wouldn't have happened. Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. The Lord drove the sea back with a powerful east wind all that night and turned the sea into dry land. So the waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with the waters like a wall to the right and to the left. God springs a trap, verse 23. Springs the trap. The Egyptians set out in pursuit. All too easy. Oh, here's these Israelites. They're between this water, there are walls on each side. There's a straight shot. We've got them. God just offered them dominion over the Israelites. Here we come. We've got it. Everything's clicking. Jesus hangs on the cross and he says, "Why have you forsaken me? You've given Satan complete dominion over my body. That can't possibly be what you planned." Ugh. All of Pharaoh's horses, his chariots and his horsemen, they went into the sea after them. Then during the morning watch, the Lord looked down on the Egyptian forces from the pillar of fire and cloud, and he threw them into confusion. He caused their chariot wheels to swerve and made them drive with difficulty. If you have the audacity to not serve Pharaoh and Egypt, it will try to destroy you. You know today's cancel culture? You better fall in line, and you better think like we think. And you try and get outside that thinking box, and you think, no, we're not going to have that. We're going to cancel you. Pharaoh's trying to cancel the Egyptians here, or the Israelites here. He's trying to cancel them. Let's get away from Israel, the Egyptians said, because Yahweh is fighting for them against Egypt. Then the Lord said to Moses, verse 26, stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may come back on the Egyptians, on their chariots and their horsemen. So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea returned to its normal depth. Well, I've got, sin has invaded the body of Jesus on the cross. Satan has won. He's got dominion over Jesus. Jesus experiences physical death. The waters come back. Stretch your hand over the sea so that the waters may come back on the Egyptians who have dominion, they think, over these Israelites, on their chariots and horsemen. So Moses stretched out his hand, and the sea returned to its normal depth, while the Egyptians were trying to escape from it. Do you know how? You know how we try? You know what they're trying to escape from? The Egyptians are trying to escape from death. You know how we do that today? And I've been involved in a couple of funerals like this. You know, people try and escape today. They redefine death. Redefine it. Oh, death isn't so bad after all. You see, they see the waters coming back over them, and the only recourse that they have, unless they are men and women of God, is to redefine death. I've been involved in funerals like that. I've had people tell me before I give the service, we don't want anything, don't get too serious. Don't get too serious about this. We want to make it more of a fun thing. So the waters came back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had gone into them, into the sea. I love these next words, don't you? None of them survived. Their domain proved to be their demise. Their dominion proved to be their demise. Any disease, any cancer, any parasite that invades your body, that has dominion over your body, and you experience physical death, you go through the sea, and the waters close over you, that disease, that cancer, that parasite is dead now. Our sister Kay. Those Egyptians that dogged her steps are dead now. What about Kay? Verse 29. But the Israelites had walked through the sea on dry ground. The positive reason for the negative role of death. My little boy had leukemia. That leukemia is dead. Go ahead and take dominion over those bodies, Satan. Go ahead. Take the Trojan horse inside. And your dominion over that body is going to prove to be your demise. Because Sunday morning came, and Jesus walked out of that tomb. And the sin that put him on that cross stayed in that tomb. With the waters like a wall on them to the right and their left, the Lord that day saved Israel from the power of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Your mom, your wife, Dan. She sees the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Remember, Moses said, you're never going to see him again. You're never going to see him again. That's God's promise to his people. And we will all have that day. You'll all have that day when you go through physical death, and you're going to have, I believe, God is going to allow you to turn around and look, and those Egyptians that harassed you, you're going to see dead. And it is his assurance to us that the Egyptians, you'll never see them again. And it's going to be an opportunity for that to be true for us. You see, that's going to give, that gave Kay, Kay was able to turn around and see that. Death, grief, crying, and pain. The Egyptians dead on the seashore. And never again will they harass her. And we each are going to have that opportunity. You see, absent that experience, you're always going to be wondering, is it coming back? Is that coming around again? Is Pharaoh coming after me again? And see, you would live with that hanging over your head. But the thing that we're going to have here as God's people is this experience. Kay was never alone for 1 second. My construal of hell is that the Egyptians will for all eternity, get around this, dog your steps. All eternity. You will have an eternity of dealing with the Egyptians. Now, that is hell. When Israel saw the power of God, the people feared the Lord and believed in him and in his servant Moses. And I'm thinking of 1 Corinthians 15, where Paul mockingly says, and here's what we can say one day, when we turn around, after we experience our own physical death, and we see those Egyptians down on the shore, we're going to be able to say exactly what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15. Death has been swallowed up in victory. Death, where is your victory? Death, where's your sting? That sin that has dominion over you right now, will prove to be its demise. God imprisons sin in our bodies for the very reason to destroy that sin. And when you walk out of that grave one day, that sin that puts that body, that physical body in the tomb, stays in the grave. Good? Let's pray. Lord, I pray you would bless these words. Amen.